Part 4. Sam's Roman Circus. Chapter 62. October 27th, 1991, Washington, D.C. Dale Nichols and Martin Brogan stood waiting on the White House steps as the president stepped from his helicopter and walked swiftly across the lawn. "You have something for me?" the president asked expectantly as he shook hands. Nichols could not contain his excitement. "We've just received a report from General Dodge. His special operations forces have retaken the Lady Flamborough intact in southern Chile. Senator Pitt, Hala Kamil, and Presidents De Lorenzo and Hassan were rescued in good condition." The president was weary from a series of non-stop conferences with the Canadian Prime Minister in Ottawa, but he brightened like a streetlight. "Thank God, that is good news. Were there any casualties?" "Two SOP men were wounded, neither seriously, but three Numa people were shot up pretty badly," reported Brogan.
"Numa people were on the scene?"
"Dirk Pitt was responsible for tracking down the cruise ship. He and three others kept the hijackers from escaping along with their hostages."
"So he helped save his own father?"
"He certainly deserves a major share of the credit." The president rubbed his hands together happily. "It's almost noon, gentlemen. Why don't we celebrate with a bottle of wine over lunch, and you can give me a full report?" Secretary of State Douglas Oates, Alan Mercier, the president's national security advisor, and Julia Schiller also joined the group for lunch. After dessert, Mercier passed around copies of the transcribed report from General Dodge. The president toyed with his fork as he read the transcript. Then he looked up, a mixture of surprise and triumph on his face.
"Topiltzin!"
"He's in it up to his ears," said Brogan. "Topiltzin provided the Mexican terrorist crew and the vessel for the switch with the cruise ship."
"So he did conspire with his brother on the Lady Flamborough hijacking," the president said.
Nichols nodded.
"The facts add up that way, but it won't be easy to prove."
"Any idea as to the identity of the mastermind behind the operation?"
"We have a make," replied Brogan briefly. "This is a condensed file on the man."
He paused to hand the president another folder. "He did a remarkable job of disguising himself to look like the captain of the ship during the capture, and then he changed to a mask. Later, Dirk Pitt met face to face with him during a truce before the fighting. The name he gave was Suleiman Aziz Amar."
"Seems odd this Amar got lax and dropped his name," mused Schiller. "Must be an alias."
Brogan shook his head.
"The name is real enough. We have a comprehensive packet on him. So does Interpol. Amar must have figured Pitt was as good as dead and had nothing to lose by correctly identifying himself."
The president's eyes narrowed.
"According to your file, he's suspected of being directly or indirectly involved with over 50 murders of prominent government officials. Is this possible?"
"Suleiman Aziz Amar is rated at the very top of his profession."
"A die-hard terrorist."
"Assassin," Brogan corrected the president. "Amar specializes only in political assassination. Cold-blooded as they come. Big on disguise and detailed planning. As the words of the song go, nobody does it better. Half his hits were so clean they were written off as accidents. He's a Muslim, but he's taken on jobs for the French and Germans and even the Israelis. Gets top dollar. He's amassed a considerable fortune for his successful operations in and around the Mediterranean."
"Was he captured?"
"No, sir," Brogan admitted. "He was not among the dead or wounded."
"The man escaped?" the president asked sharply.
"If he still lives, Amar cannot get far," Brogan assured him. "Pitt thinks he pumped at least three bullets into him. An extensive manhunt has been activated. There is no escape from the island. He should be found in a few hours."
"He'll be a major intelligence coup if he can be persuaded to talk," said Nichols.
"General Dodge has already alerted his field commander, Colonel Morton Hollis, to take every precaution in capturing Amar alive. But the colonel thinks there is good reason to believe Amar will kill himself when cornered."
Nichols shrugged resignedly.
"Hollis is probably right."
"There were no other survivors among the hijackers?" the president asked Brogan.
8 we can interrogate, but they appear to be only Amar's hired mercenaries and not radical Yazid followers."
"We'll need their confessions to prove Amar was working for Yazid and Topiltzin," said the president without optimism.
Schiller did not feel there was a setback.
"Look on the bright side, Mr. President. The ship and hostages have been rescued without injury. President Hassan knows damn well Yazid wanted him dead and was behind the hijacking. He'll go after Yazid now with a vengeance. The president looked at him, and then his eyes traveled from face to face. Is that the way you gentlemen see it?
Julius has a good grasp of Hassan, said Mercier. He can be real nasty if he's crossed.
Doug Oates nodded in agreement.
Barring unforeseen developments, I think Julius's projection is right on the money.
Hassan may not go so far as to risk riots and ignite a revolution by arresting Yazid and trying him for treason, but he'll certainly take off the gloves and do everything short of murder to destroy Yazid's credibility.
There will be a backlash against Yazid, Brogan predicted. Egypt's Muslim fundamentalist moderates do not condone terrorist tactics. They'll turn their backs on Yazid while the country's parliament gives President Hassan overwhelming support. Also, in my best rose-colored view, the military will climb down out of its ivory tower and reaffirm its loyalty to Hassan. The president took a final swallow of wine and set the glass on the table.
I must confess I like what I hear.
The crisis in Egypt is far from over, warned Secretary Oates. Yazid may be pushed out of the limelight for a while, but in President Hassan's absence, the Muslim Brotherhood of Fundamentalist Fanatics has formed an alliance with the Liberal and Socialist Labor Parties. Together, they'll work to undermine Hassan's rule, to bring Egypt under Islamic law, cut ties with the United States, and scuttle Israeli peace agreements.
The president tilted his head at Schiller.
Do you subscribe to Doug's doomsday canvas, Julius?
Schiller nodded grimly.
I do.
Martin?
Brogan's solemn expression told it all.
The inevitable has only been stalled off. Hassan's government must eventually fall. The military's support will be here today and gone tomorrow. My best brains at Langley project a fairly bloodless coup 18 to 24 months from now.
I recommend we take a hands-off, wait-and-see attitude, Mr. President, said Oates, and study our options in dealing with another Muslim government.
You're suggesting an isolationist approach, said the president.
Maybe it's time we took that stance, suggested Schiller.
Nothing of substance your predecessors attempted in the last 20 years worked.
The Russians will lose too, added Nichols.
And our big consolation is in keeping Paul Capister, also known as Ahmad Yazid, from creating another Iranian disaster. He would have worked to destroy our Middle East interests at any cost.
I do not entirely agree with your overall picture, said Brogan, but in the time we have left we still have the opportunity to cultivate the next man to rule Egypt.
A questioning frown crossed the president's face.
Who do you have in mind?
Egypt's defense minister, Abu Hamid.
You think he'll seize the government?
When the time is ripe, yes, Brogan explained patiently.
He has the power of the military in his pocket, and he shrewdly sought strong support from the moderate Muslim fundamentalists. In my opinion, Abu Hamid is a shoo-in.
We could do much worse, murmured Oates with a thin smile.
He hasn't been above accepting favors and tapping some of the billions of dollars we've poured into Egypt. Abu Hamid would not be the type to kick a gift horse in the mouth.
Oh, sure, he'd make the required noises condemning Israel and cursing the U.S. for the sake of the religious fanatics, but underneath the rhetoric he'd keep a friendly line of communications open.
The fact that he's on close terms with Hala Kamil won't hurt us either, Nichols said flatly.
The president was silent, staring into the glass of Zinfandel as if it was a crystal ball. Then he raised the glass.
To a continued friendly union with Egypt.
Hear, hear, said Mercier and Brogan in unison.
To Egypt, murmured Oates.
And Mexico, added Schiller.
The president glanced at his watch and rose, followed by his advisers.
Sorry to cut this short, but I have a meeting with a group of treasury people.
Congratulate everyone involved in rescuing the hostages for me.
He turned to Oates.
I want to meet with you and Senator Pitt the minute he returns.
To discuss any words he had with President Hassan during their ordeal?
I'd be more interested in hearing what he learned from President De Lorenzo on the crisis south of our border. Egypt is of secondary importance compared to Mexico. We can safely assume Ahmad Yazid has been benched for the rest of the season, but Topiltzin is a far worse threat.
Concentrate on him, gentlemen. God help us if we can't stabilize the upheaval in Mexico.